Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 237 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. Jumping straight back into it. Fight reviews this past Saturday, the 24th of June, from the Madison Square Garden Theater in New York City on DAZN, the debut on DAZN of Edgar Berlanga, as he remains undefeated at 21-0 with a unanimous decision win over 12 rounds against Jason Quigley, who takes the third professional loss of his career. Berlanga won by scores of 116-108 twice and 118-106. Quigley was down four times throughout the fight. And if you didn't see the fight and you just read the scores and you see that Quigley was down four times, it seems like Quigley got dominated. But Quigley was actually a very game fighter. I think those scores don't really reflect how the fight went. I think Quigley, I don't want to say I picked Quigley last week. I think I kind of stood on the fence, but I gave Quigley a lot of credit. I thought Berlanga was going to have a more difficult time than people thought. And even though Quigley was down multiple times, he fought pretty good, and he got Berlanga with some really good shots. And obviously Berlanga's calling card for a while under the Top Rank banner was consecutive KOs, stopping his opponent. I mean, he couldn't do that to Quigley. You know, Quigley dug down deep, even though in a losing effort. I think he still gave a great account of himself. What do you think about the performance?
No, you were right. I mean, a great performance from Quigley. I think maybe if they'd done it at 160, not dragged Quigley up to 168, it's just he was elusive enough most of the rounds. But sometimes just those rounds where Berlanga caught him, you know, he was just putting him down, because I'm sure Berlanga probably came in at probably like a light heavyweight or something like that by the time he's rehydrated. Whereas I'm sure Quigley probably only put on a couple of pounds, you know, after the weigh-in, because he's essentially spent most of his career at 160. But, you know, he did really well. I thought the game plan that him and Andy Lee had cooked up, just kind of like having that very European amateur style of like the lead hand in front, kind of like occupying Berlanga, kind of worked, and had him befuddled at times. He just wasn't landing enough. You know, some rounds he looked really good. He was elusive. He'd knock him back with a couple of jabs and stuff like that, but it just wasn't enough. It was, you know, Berlanga was essentially just like the Terminator, because the stuff that was coming at him just didn't have much, you know, much on it to really kind of like, you know, back him up. Whereas he could just come forward, keep chasing him around. I thought the Quigley did well, but it just, you know, four knockdowns kind of, you know, says it all essentially. Just didn't have the power really to hurt Berlanga too much, but a good performance from him. And I think even with that, I think you can kind of see Berlanga is learning, and it may be his best performance, which sounds weird, right? Because we said Quigley did so well, but Berlanga, in terms of some of his other performances when he was going the distance, didn't look too good. Whereas this one, I think you can quite comfortably give him the win, and also say that slowly but surely, you know, he's improving himself, which sounds strange for someone that's 21-0, right?
Right. No, absolutely. Yeah. You know, how old is he? Do we know how old he is? 20?
I don't think he's that old. I think he was probably like,
no, he's not. I think he's, yeah, he's young. He's young. So I still think he has some time.
26.
Do we want to say he has time? I think at the age he's at, he's, in terms of that, if you just try to be objective about the age, he has some time. But because Top Rank and ESPN did such a good job in elevating his profile, and he was facing so many guys where he got the KOs like in the first or second round. It was early nights for him, and you know, he came out with Fat Joe, the rapper, and all that. And, you know, he had a pretty decent following in the New York area. Do you think it's kind of like something like how it's in comparison to Ryan Garcia, where And I'm using Ryan Garcia because he's probably the biggest example, but in terms of where the profile is a lot higher and more elevated than the actual talent.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem, right?
Right. Yeah.
I think you're right. I think that's the problem. You know, if you look at what Top Rank did to him, you know, he went 16 victories, 16 first round KOs. He kind of got a little bit of ahead of himself. And in my opinion, I think for the level that they're trying to push him to, he should really be making easier work of Jason Quigley, right? When people like Sean Mosley are beating Jason Quigley and Andrade, got rid of Jason Quigley in the second round or something like that. And Andrade is not known as a puncher. I know people say he is and he can be, and he's the reason that he doesn't have more KOs, he's kind of like safety first.
Right.
He obviously didn't fear Quigley that much that he just dived on him and took him out in two rounds.
Right, right. And in terms of Andrade, I mean, in a way, it kind of sucks that for Eddie Hearn and Matchroom and DAZN that Andrade left and went to PBC. I mean, it was just timing. You know, Andrade saw that he can get the fights over there. So just like Canelo signing with Showtime and all that, which we'll touch on later. But an Andrade Berlanga fight on the DAZN platform with Matchroom would have been pretty intriguing, right?
Yeah, good fight. I mean, I think Andrade would be too elusive for him, you know. Andrade can box, and I think he would box circles around Berlanga, especially on some of the performances that we've seen as of late. I think he would make pretty easy work of Berlanga, to be honest with you. I think anyone that can actually box and dance around and is kind of elusive is, you know, in general, stereotypical terms, people that bang find those type of fighters difficult, right? Because it's hard for them to really shut off the ring and stuff like that. And, you know, they've become kind of so reliant on their power over time that they just kind of get used to that, really, don't they? They knock people out in a couple of rounds and they don't really have to learn certain things that other fighters do. So yeah, in stereotypical terms, those are the ones that are going to be hard. And I think that's the case for Berlanga.
Right. Yeah. I mean, either way, I think any promoter would have signed him. Obviously, we saw De La Hoya met with him in New York and Eddie Hearn, and Berlanga ended up choosing Matchroom and Eddie Hearn. But, you know, a lot of the hard work, as I mentioned, was already, I don't want to say a lot of the hard work, there's still work to be done, but ESPN and Top Rank got him to a position already where it's easier for another promoter to slide in and be like, okay, he's already has a profile. And, you know, it's a business at the end of the day, and these broadcasters like DAZN, they need ratings and stuff like that. So Berlanga has a following, some type of following, at least, especially in the Northeast area of the United States. But, you know, let's see where his talent takes him, you know, because I'm sure there's going to be people, and there already has been, who criticize him for this win, even though he won. They're like, oh, he should have taken care of Quigley. You know, Quigley's not like a huge name. We know who he is. We know who he is because we're big fans of, you know, the sport, but to a lot of casuals or maybe somebody who was watching DAZN or something who tuned in, they're like, oh, who is this guy? You know, they probably looked at it like, oh, Berlanga should have took him out. But that's why last week I was just like, I think Quigley's going to be more difficult than people think. And, you know, Quigley's been in there with Andrade. He's also been in there with
Toronto Johnson.
Yeah. So, you know, Quigley's, I mean, would you call him, would you categorize him as a veteran right now? Seasoned? Or what do you think?
I don't know if I'd call him a veteran of the sport, but he's been around. You know, I'd say he's more becoming kind of like that gatekeeper to the world level, because every time he kind of steps up and he faces someone, not even of note, I guess, really, he's kind of like a middle of the pack, right? You know, when you lose into like Mosley Jr. and Tiriano Johnson, you know, I don't see those guys going on to do, you know, outstanding things in the boxing world. So yeah, I would say he's like a middle of the road pack. You know, I thought it was carefully selected, and that, you know, they were going to try to go for the knockout on Quigley. But yeah, he managed to take him rounds, and that's obviously just because he didn't really want to stand in the pocket and fight with him.
What do you think about, and I don't think it's probable right now, I would hope it is, but I don't think so based on the Twitter exchange that we saw between Oscar De La Hoya and Eddie Hearn over this past weekend. But what do you think about a potential matchup between Berlanga and Shane Mosley Jr.? It would have to be Golden Boy and Matchroom working together, but they're both on the DAZN platform. What do you think about that matchup?
I think we'd all wish for the other Golden Boy fire, right? We all want Munguia.
Right. Yeah. I was going to throw that name out there next. Yeah.
I could kind of see that because Mosley's kind of hit a little bit of a purple patch, and the fact that we need, well, Belanger's going to be treading water for a little bit of time because of the fact that I think, you know, obviously they had Canelo, or they thought they had Canelo. Canelo then gone over to the PBC, and I'm sure Belanger's looking around like, what the hell? Like, Eddie Hearn told me that I was going to do two fights and then we were going to get a big Mexico-Puerto Rico showdown, you know, in either March or September of next year, probably in the Northeast, you know, somewhere in like the New York area. So, yeah, I could maybe see that if they want to put two fights together. You know, he's just had this one. Stick him in there with maybe like Shane Mosley Jr. and then maybe a Munguia fight. And then if he's managed to win all of those, the contract with Canelo may be up, and then they can have that huge Canelo fight towards the end of next year.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think if Canelo doesn't retire by the end of this PBC multi-fight deal that he has with Showtime and with Al Heyman, which I don't want to jump into that hole yet because we're going to touch on that later. But in a way, Berlanga signing with Matchroom, DAZN, has a couple fights. Ideally, how many fights do you think he should have before the end of next year? Because he probably won't get, I mean, it's highly likely. It's very likely, actually. He shouldn't expect any Canelo fight until 2025, right?
Yeah, I would have thought so. If we're sticking with the usual Canelo dates, you're looking at obviously March, September, and then we've seen the odd December or maybe just one December, right? If Canelo decides he wants, you know, three fights that year, then we have seen like a December fight before. So, but yeah, in general, you're looking at just two fights a year on the Mexican holidays.
Right. Right, yeah. I mean, how many fights ideally do you think Berlanga should have under his belt before any potential consideration for a Canelo fight? If Canelo's still fighting by that, you know, Canelo's been fighting since he was 15, professionally at least. I mean, we don't know. We're just speculating here, but by the time 2025, let's just say May 2025 rolls around, when there's that's the only probable chance that any Berlanga fight would be open to that possibility. How many fights should Berlanga have under his belt on his DAZN Matchroom contract by then?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because it's carefully selected. Like, if you've got, and we all complain about this as fans, we all complain about this, but you're asking me essentially to put myself in Eddie Hearn's shoes, right?
Like, I'm doing it right fights? Now. And you need to answer it, Mike. Do it.
Yeah. So it's kind of like carefully selected fights until that Canelo payday. But if you think for some reason that may not happen, you know, ever since we've seen this PBC announcement about Canelo going over there, people keep talking about Benavidez is going to take him out. And this could be the last time we see Canelo. And, you know, maybe if you think that could happen, then maybe take the Munguia fight. That's probably the second biggest payday, right? In that, obviously, Canelo is a different stratosphere. And then I think at that weight category, the second biggest payday is probably Jaime Munguia.
I think a Munguia-Berlanga fight is very exciting.
Yeah. Biggest payday, I think.
I think Munguia beats him, but I just don't see, I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see De La Hoya and Eddie Hearn working together unless DAZN steps in and says, hey, we want to see this fight, man. Like, you guys need to work together. You know, like, because, I mean, Munguia is also in a tough spot too, right? I mean, we've talked about that. That's beating the dead horse, you know. Munguia is in a tough spot in terms of who he could fight because a lot of his counterparts are PBC or, you know, on the other side somewhere else. And Berlanga is a name. And I think a lot of people would you know, easily pick Munguia to beat him. You know, what about Berlanga and Derevchenko? I think Derevchenko beats him, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think he's a tricky customer. And on those last couple of performances, do you really want to throw him in there with somebody like that, right? That's that thing. That's the problem when you've got, like we said last week, John Ryder. He's on the same platform. He's just fought Canelo. But then I think he may come up and beat Berlanga as well. Depending on how much he's got left after that Canelo fight, you know, has he done like a lot of other champions have done, or a lot of people that's had been in big fights? Has he gone away and just enjoyed life too much, and he comes back in against Berlanga and looks kind of crappy because he's had to, you know, instead of having a fight camp, he's had a weight stripping camp.
One final thing for me on the Berlanga fight here. Let's just say throughout this contract with Matchroom and Eddie Hearn, and before any consideration of a Canelo fight in 2025, if it gets to that point, do we see a Bivol across the ring from him during this contract?
Do we see Bivol across the ring from Canelo?
From Berlanga.
No. Not unless you're just trying to cash out. Bivol would take him to school.
No, right. I think everybody would agree with that. But I mean, if it gets to the point where, like, hey, you know, Bivol said he can make 168. He's like, oh yeah, I can make it easily. If it gets to the point where, like, oh, we need opponents. Bivol needs an opponent, some type of name. Berlanga, you know, needs to fight. You know, names to, like, you know, it's a long time before any potential Canelo fight. Andrade's not there. Charlo's not there. You know, Benavidez isn't there. I mean, who else are we looking at? You got Shane Mosley. Mosley's probable. But
Beck the Bully.
Beck the Bully's probable. Shane Mosley's probable. And I mean, they're with the other promoter, but they're all in the zone. But
you could stick him in there with, what's his name? Gongoria. Remember who came up on a few of those DAZN shows and he like surprisingly won the IBO world title?
I remember the IBO thing.
Carlos Gongoria, you know, you could put him in there and just kind of, you know, you can sell it to the everyday fan like, hey, here's Berlanga. He's going in with this heavy handed guy and he was an ex world champion. And all people are going to be like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, they're not nerds like us that would go, yeah, that's like the fifth world title, like the IBO. But who you can stick him IBO in there with somebody like that.
Who has the IBO at 168 right now?
168?
Why not put Berlanga against the IBO world champion at 168 and have him have that? I know it's not one of the three major sanctioning bodies, but why not? Who was it? Was it Chris Eubank? Chris Eubank Jr., who was all about it? Why not do the same? You know, what has he got to lose?
Just give me 1 second. I'm flying through to see who is the... So, 168 IBO vacant.
It's even better.
No, sorry. I was looking at 160. 168 IBO is Ocelis Iglesias from the Dominican... No, sorry, where's he from? Cuba. Out of Germany.
Oh, wait,
born in Cuba, but now trains and fights out of Berlin, Germany.
Oh, wow. Those Cubans can fight. They can fight. I mean, why not? You know, you can sell it as a type of world title fight. Have him do the Chris Eubank Jr. thing. Yeah. Carries the belt around. Like, I'm a world champion. I don't care if it's not like one of the three. Like, you know, why not, right? Why not go that route?
No, you can, because I think with Berlanga, I think you have to protect him because everyone can see that he has a very limited one-dimensional style. So if you stick him in with some of these lower commodities, these guys that are kind of like all risk, low reward, you're going to come unstuck easier than you would do with somebody else who's a more well-rounded fighter. So you need to stick him in there with people that can get hit, people that don't move too much. You could just see that when he fought Quigley. If Quigley had some power, he probably would have won that fight.
Right. But,
so, yeah, I mean, Eddie Hearn's in a tricky situation now that the Canelo's gone to PBC. You're kind of like, okay, do I wait for Canelo? Because he could come unstuck against a nobody. Or do you just throw him in there and hope that, you know, he has a good fight against Jaime Munguia and essentially cash out maybe early, or he could get two paydays. He goes in with Munguia, beats Munguia, and then he also gets to the Canelo payday, and then you're laughing.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Moving on to the co-main event of this card in New York City. I guess in an upset, right, as we can probably consider this, Joe Cusumano gets the eighth round TKO over former rising heavyweight contender Adam Kownacki from Poland, who takes the fourth loss of his career. This fight ended. Kownacki was down in the first round of the fight, very, very early, and obviously ended up being stopped seven rounds later in round eight. Were you surprised about this result?
100%. I think it's one of those fights where Kownacki sells tickets. He had looked a little bit washed in his last two couple of fights, but he'd gone away, kind of regrouped, and then obviously decided that, you know, that he did want to give it another go. He came in, he'd lost a lot of weight. But I don't know whether that took something off his chin or, you know, that shot that Cusumano caught him with was a peach of a shot over the top, right on the jaw, which put Kownacki down. And he did well to get up from that and carry on, to be honest with you, because it was a picture-perfect shot. But I just think maybe those fights with Areola and the fights with Hellenius just took something out of Kownacki. And now we just don't, he's not the same person anymore. And, you know, hopefully he's made some good money in those previous fights and he can kind of just like sail off into the sunset and, you know, kind of like a Ricky Hatton where he came back for one fight. They hopefully both had that fire kind of extinguished, right? You're like, okay, you know, it's not there anymore. I can't go to the well. There's nothing left. And he can just kind of ride off into the sunset with some money made, let's hope, because, you know, he sold a lot of tickets and that's why he kind of stayed in that, you know, in the New York area, because you could put him on the card and you were guaranteed to sell a lot of tickets with him and Belanga and people like that from that area. So I don't know about, I know that obviously the biggest thing from this fight was, should it have been stopped a lot earlier? The problem was if you watch the referee, the amount of times that it looked like Cusumano had him and he was kind of like leathering him and, you know, just pummeling the shots in, but then Kownacki would come back and he would catch him. And there was a couple of times where like, it looked like the referee was going to stop it. But then Kownacki actually rocked him. I think it was like maybe the second or the third when I was kind of like, oh shit, Kownacki's going to knock him out. And then he had him against the ropes and then unfortunately the bell went and then he came out again. And it was difficult. It was difficult. And I know there was talk of supposedly his family or his manager had told the corner to throw the towel in or whatever and stuff like that. But it's up to the, obviously, you know, the chief second. And, you know, he tells, either throws the towel in or he tells, you know, the athletic inspector, like, hey, that's it, I want to stop it. You know, they can stop it or the referee can stop it. You know, and I'm guessing they both saw the same thing. Kownacki was, you know, throwing back. And essentially that's kind of telling you, like, hey, I'm still in it. But it did seem a little bit towards the end, you know, like when we're watching at home, you're kind of like, oh, shit, oh, oh, ow, ow. That's when you know, like, even us as fans were kind of like, yeah, okay, this needs to be stopped.
Yeah, it was an entertaining fight up until it ended. You know,
it was a great fight.
Back and forth action. Yeah. So, you know, I think that if there's any silver lining for, I think is it Kownacki or is it Kownacki? Because I think that I've heard on broadcast that they pronounce it as Kownacki.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, both ways, I think, yeah.
I don't know. But if there's any silver lining about that fight for him, for Kownacki, is that he did, even though he got TKO'd in the eighth, he did show that he can still go. So, I mean, should that tell him and his team, like, hey, maybe we can still keep going. Even though we lost and it sucks, we were in it. We were in it until we weren't.
It really depends on what level, doesn't it? Like, if you've been at some of the big fights, like he has Robert Hellenius, Chris Areola, you know, fighting at Madison Square Garden on like a pretty regular basis, do you want to drop back down and be fighting essentially like club level fighters like Joe Cusumano and going life or death? I don't know. Maybe if he needs the money, like Rocky, you know, where he just has to keep dragging himself off the floor and getting in there and fighting these guys. But hopefully he's been a lot smarter with the money that he's made. He's making heavyweight money, heavyweight TV money at MSG. Yeah. So I imagine, unless he's been robbed by some type of manager or something like that, I'm assuming he's made some very good paydays, and hopefully he can, you know, kind of sail off into the sunset. You know, I kind of found it hard that I think they said that it was the first time his kids had come to watch him.
Because,
you know, they were kind of like old enough now to kind of watch it and understand. And I was thinking, oh shit, this wasn't a good fight for him to come to, because he's going life or death and getting beaten around the ring.
Yeah, that sucks. Well, hopefully they're okay. Sometimes you get scarred as a kid like that. Moving on to a great, entertaining fight. It was a very, very good scrap. Yankiel Rivera-Figueroa, the Puerto Rican medalist, Olympic medalist, remains undefeated with the fourth professional win of his career, with a unanimous decision win over Christian Robles, who takes the first loss of his career. He is now 8-1. Christian Robles was our guest of the week last week here on the last round. He joined us in a bonus episode. So if you have some time to go listen to that, you can learn about his upbringing, how he got into boxing, all that stuff. And he previews his fight. I think Robles knew that it was going to be a tough fight, but he was going to give it his all. Robles trains at Freddie Roach's Wild Card Gym with Marvin Zamudio, and he's trained there for years now. I mean, what can you say? You know, he gave a good account of himself against an Olympic medalist, right?
Great fight. I absolutely loved watching it. You know, it was great to have him on, and then having to see him, what, 5-6 days later, go into that fight and do that at MSG. He didn't look overawed by the occasion. I remember he came on here and he said that he actually kind of enjoys those experiences. And Jesus Christ, it did. It looked like he did. He got in there, and straight away, I think Figueroa tried to like nail him with a shot, and boom, Robles came back, just caught him. And one of those fights, like, you have those rare fights where even though you lose, you know, the opponent loses, but they come out on top. Kind of like the Joshua Klitschko fight, where you just watch that and you're like, Jesus, like, even though Klitschko lost, like, he still went up in my estimation. So that's what it was like for Robles, in my opinion. He went in with somebody of like an unbelievable amateur career. And Robles get in there, and, you know, he lost probably most of the rounds, but all the rounds were close. And he nailed him a few times. And if only, you know, Robles had maybe some more power, or Figueroa's chin wasn't as good. But it was an unbelievable fight. I loved every single round of it. All 8 rounds were fun to watch. And on that performance, you know, let's hope that, you know, Matchroom, Eddie Hearn, or somebody gives Robles another performance, because he's definitely a TV fighter, because he just stood in the pocket, stand and banged. At some point, he got knocked out, got back up, and one of his legs wasn't really working. And he saw out the entire round, but he didn't just run. He had to stand there and fight, and he did. And you can see the referee had seen his leg wasn't working, but he was throwing back all the time. Great performance from him. Definitely deserves to be on some big cards again. And he's definitely going to cause some waves, I think, in that division, just with the amount of heart that he has.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully, like you said, hopefully DAZN, Matchroom, Eddie Hearn noticed it. You know, like, hey, you know what? Maybe he deserves a contract here, and we can give him a shot, you know, because it is, you know, Christian Robles is needed. I mean, taking his first loss, and like he even, like Robles said in his interview last week with us, he didn't really have an amateur career. Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of just turned pro pretty fast, and being 8-0 is impressive. And, you know, taking his first loss of his career obviously sucks, but, you know, there's some of the best fighters in the world and in the history of the sport have had losses. So, you know, I think Figueroa was the favorite in the fight, being the Puerto Rican medalist, obviously. But Robles, with the heart that he has and the background and him training at Freddie Roach's Wild Card Gym and the people that he sparred with, and he's, like, you know, observed in that gym, being one of the most famous gyms in the world, arguably the most famous gym, if you had to pick, you know, that's an X factor for him. So yeah, hopefully, like you said, hopefully Eddie Hearn and DAZN and Matchroom notice something, or maybe any other promoter, they notice something and then kind of give him a shot, man, you know, cause he deserves it. You know, he's one of those fighters, that he seems like a pretty good investment. Like, he could turn out to be excellent. And even if he's not like a top tier guy by the end of his career, he seems like he's always going to be one of those fighters that you put him in there with another fighter and he's always gonna be tough. Kind of like a Dervinchenko, right?
Yeah, Dervinchenko's never in a fight where he gets blown out, is he? He's always in super close, split decisions, majority decisions, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, hopefully. But I'm sure he'll be on here on the last round again in the future. Moving on, also this past weekend from the Armory in Minneapolis, Minnesota on Showtime, Carlos Adames gets the 9th round TKO over Julian J. Rock Williams. And this was for the WBC interim middleweight title of the world. This was a good fight too. Yeah. This is a really good fight too. I think I picked J. Rock Williams last week. And you picked Adames. But essentially it was kind of touch and go up until the stoppage of the TKO in the 9th round. They both had to dig down deep to go after each other, right?
Yeah, it's a good fight, really good fight. I thought that Williams kind of started well, and then he like faded a little bit. And I thought Adames started to take it over towards the towards the end, where the referee stopped in, controversially, I guess. A lot of people seem to be kicking off about it, and obviously, Julian Williams' trainer Stephen Bredwin Edwards, he was kicking off, swearing, kind of chased the referee a little bit. So I don't know what's going to happen there, and may get a little ban or something like that from the Minnesota. Yeah. But yeah, I thought Adames did well. I just thought it was going to be one of those ones where I thought he was going to be a little bit too big, a little bit too strong. I thought that his body attack and his power shots just were very consistent, and that stopped Williams kind of being able to move as much. Williams is just very up and down as well. He'll come in with some amazing performances, and then you see him again and he's not so great and stuff like that. And then kind of been in the wilderness for the last like couple of years. So I was kind of surprised that he was even really in the ring with Adames, but he did give a good showing of himself. And I thought it was a little bit early. And I know a lot of people were saying, well, it looked like it was going that way. But then you're reading into the future, you need to wait till it has gone that way. And then the referee steps in. You can't just say like, oh, well, it was all going that way. It was all going downhill, because look, it's boxing. It only takes one punch. And, sometimes it does happen. You get those guys that are, look at, for example, in England, Danny Williams back in the day, his shoulder came out of his socket. And with one arm, he knocked someone out in the heavyweight division.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that's kind of gone down in history. So I think the referee maybe should have left it a little bit more and then have stopped the fight if he was still taking more punishment. Because I know that I was listening to, was it the Fight Disciples were saying that there's been three very controversial referee stoppages recently. The Rolly Romero one, this one, and I can't remember the third one. And they've all been on Showtime. They've all been PBC cards.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that a coincidence? Who knows? Who knows? But, I mean, it's boxing. Like, we see it all the time. But, I mean, what are we supposed to do? There's always complaining and like this is ridiculous. They need a revamp of the judges and the system, and nothing ever happens.
A lot of Americans complain about the British referees jumping in too early. And
right,
I've always said it happens everywhere. Every single.
No, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that these, it's all allegedly, but in the NBA over here in the United States, the National Basketball Association, there was and I don't know what happened, because I know the NBA investigated it, but during the playoffs a couple months ago, there was a game, I think, between the Miami Heat and I don't know if it was Denver Nuggets or somebody. It was the playoffs, and there was a play where one of the I think Miami Heat players was going up to the basket, and he lays it up and he makes it. And they were showing the replay, and in the background, there's a referee, one of the referees, because there's like three referees, I think, on the court. And in the background of the referee, as he sees the basket go in, he makes like a face like, oh, man, like he's like rooting for the other team. And on social media, it was shared everywhere. Like, people were sharing it like, hey, did this guy have like a bet? Like, was he betting for the other team or what? Because he had a facial expression like, ah, man, it went in. And it's like, wait a minute, aren't you the referee? And I think the NBA investigated it. I don't know what the result of it was or if it's still ongoing. But, we want to have faith in the system, in all these systems. But stuff happens, man. It's just like politics, you know, backroom deals and all that stuff. And I don't know if you watched the Arnold Schwarzenegger
documentary
on Netflix, and we're not sponsored by them, so we're just mentioning it. but he talks about when he was governor of California, he ran as a Republican, and there's Democrats, you know, in the state Senate and all that. And he even said, he's like, oh yeah, he's like, it's a bunch of bullshit. He's like, I made a bunch of deals with a bunch of other, you know, state senators and state representatives who were on the other side of the aisle from me. He's like, we made a bunch of deals, but we also made a deal publicly to be like, hey, in public, I'm going to have to go against you and say this, but I'm going to make this deal behind the scenes with you. And he said that. He's like, yeah, it's just a bunch of bullshit. He's like, it's a game. You don't think sports is like that too? I mean, you got to be realistic here, you know? And we've been, you know, how many people complain about these decisions or these stoppages or these whatever? It's going to keep happening, you know? I mean, maybe something happens eventually, but sometimes the WBC says like, oh, we're going to look into this, but nothing ever happens from that. I mean, you know, what are you supposed to do? Look at, who is it? Adelaide Byrd years ago in Las Vegas, Nevada. You know, that was a huge one, but she's still judging fights. I don't know if she's retired now, but she was still judging fights. You know, they looked into the matter, and what happened? Nothing.
Well, you know, obviously, I don't know if we've announced it on here, but first weekend in September, I'm taking my judges and referees class up in Ventura County, so I can report back to you on how it's all done and the training and stuff like that. So hopefully we can kind of discuss that, you know.
Ventura County, for our listeners outside of California, is in Southern California. It's just outside of Los Angeles, a little bit up north. It's where the Oxnard, where like Robert Garcia's old gym used to be, in that general area where Lomachenko trains, all that.
Edgar Klimas has bought that gym from Robert Garcia, and it's now...
Igis Klimas, yeah.
Yeah, what did I say? Edgar?
Edgar, yeah.
So Lomachenko, Usyk, all those guys, Kovalev used to train there. So it's filled with his fighters now.
Yeah, so report back by the end of the year. We'll touch on that, see what your experience was like. In the co-main event of this Showtime card, Fernando Daniel Martinez remains undefeated at 16-0 with the TKO in the 11th round over Jade Bordnaya, who takes the first loss of his career. This was for the IBF super flyweight title. What'd you think about this fight?
Great fight. Another great fight. Yeah. Back and forth. And I think it's the second time we've now seen an Ia explode. Because you remember, who was it? Was it Stephen Smith when he fought Francisco Vargas in Vegas, where his ear just exploded and he was hanging off? So this was kind of like a similar thing where he obviously just got, you know, started to get puffy. And I think Fernando Martinez noticed that and just kept laying into it. And then there was a camera in the corner. He just hits him. Boom, the ear explodes and blood just goes all over the camera. Unbelievable. But a great back and forth fight. And then... stopped by the referee in the 11th, I think, due to the fact that his ear had just exploded and there was blood all over. But a great fight, and Jade Bonera did just a great performance for somebody. I think it was the first time he really stepped onto such a big scene, and definitely someone I like to watch again. You can see that he was heavy-handed, but Martinez, to just come out of nowhere, beat Jerwin and Cajas twice, and then have this unbelievable fight with Jade Bonera. I love watching him. He's one of those fighters now where you see his name and I'm like, okay, like he's never in a boring fight.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It was a good fight between two undefeated fighters, a world championship fight. Those flyweights fight. Yeah.
I know we keep talking about it, but that division, dude, is.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Just to throw so many punches.
Christian Robles is a flyweight. He was on last weekend. I mean, he took his first loss, but he was game. I mean, the whole division. Even the guys who like aren't technically at the top level elite of the division, a lot of these guys can fight, man. That's a division. I mean, it doesn't get the notoriety and the money behind it that like welterweight, lightweight, you know, super middleweight and stuff like that, heavyweight gets, obviously. But in terms of pound for pound, like competition between the fighters, I mean, that you probably have to look at flyweight, right?
Yeah, I think now, because obviously before, like featherweight, you used to get a lot of good featherweights, you know, like Santa Cruz and those guys.
Valdez, yeah.
They kind of like all moved up and lightweight and like 130 to 140 tends to be like those kind of divisions now. And I think anything below like 130, you've got to go down as, I think, as far as flyweight now. I think it's the one that's kind of like a hot commodity. It's the one where everyone is. And then you know, back up to like 130, 140. Those tend to be the good divisions to watch now, because the flyweights, you just got more names coming in. Chocolatito, you've got Sonny Edwards stirring the pot and talking trash. So it's becoming just a real good division, you know, flyweight and super flyweight, because there's obviously not much between them. They can all kind of switch up and down.
Absolutely, yeah. Rounding off that Showtime card, Erickson Lubin gets the fifth round KO over Luis Arias, who takes the fourth professional loss of his career. I think I picked Arias last week, and I think you picked Lubin. This was also a really good fight, too. This whole card had really good matchups. Like, I got to give it to Showtime and Heyman. These were all really, really good competitive matchups on the card, right?
Yeah, no, all the ones that we've kind of reviewing just now, they're really good card. It was one of those nights where I had DAZN on the laptop, and then Showtime was on the TV, so I could kind of watch both. But yeah, I thought it was a good performance from Lubin. I thought Arias did okay, but Lubin, I know we keep saying it, but I still think he's got something. I still think he's got another run in him.
And this he's still young.
Yeah, but kind of like his third chance, though, right? He had that big loss to Charlo, and then he had Lubin. He fought Fundora, right? It was him and Fundora had that crazy fight.
Yeah, that was a good fight, though.
Yeah, so I still think he's still young, and he's still got something in him, and PBC seemed to like him. Still think he's got a chance of doing something. Maybe he's the sort of guy that should go for like an IBO world title.
Yeah, I mean, you would think, right? But I don't think PBC and Showtime are going to do that. I mean, a lot of promoters and broadcasters won't go for that, but I think Showtime and Al Heyman are the least ones to ever go for titles like that. You know, if you had to rank all the promoters and broadcasters, I think Showtime and PBC are definitely the biggest opponents to the IBO title. Mm. So, I mean, they have that WBA relationship, so, you know, they're going to go after the WBA eventually, see how that works. But yeah, these are good matchups on this Showtime card. Also, this past weekend from the Ota City General Gymnasium in Tokyo, Japan, across the globe, Kazuta Aoka gets the 12-round unanimous decision win and becomes the WBA Super Flyweight Champion of the World, as he defeats former world champion who had the WBA flyweight, super flyweight title, Joshua Franco, who actually lost the title on the scales the day before the fight. He was close to 6 pounds, right, overweight. And then Joshua Franco subsequently announced his retirement on Instagram, on social media, after the fight. I mean, what'd you think about the fight before we talk about Franco's announcement?
It was a tricky one, because I kept thinking to myself, I was like, okay, well, Franco's probably going to win this now, because he was just going to come in so heavy. I thought he was just going to be too big and too strong. For him to actually come in, I don't know what the contract ended up saying. Maybe there was some sort of limit to what he could come in at, since he was already overweight on the weigh-in day. But yeah, I thought Aoka did pretty well. Unanimous decision victory over Joshua Franco. And then afterwards, you know, with his announcement of retirement due to, you know, struggling with mental health over the last few years, maybe it's the reason why, you know, he didn't really perform on the day. And I know that him and Robert Garcia said some things about they weren't too sure fight week, whether the fight was on or whether it was off and stuff like that. But they didn't kind of expand on why they thought that. And I'd never heard any rumors about the fight being off. So I don't know, maybe they were just looking for something to kind of say to cover the reason, you know, that Joshua Franco came in at like 6 pounds, nearly 7 pounds over, two whole weight divisions over. But, you know, it seems to be a more frequent thing now, you know, sports people kind of putting up with, you know, mental health problems, you know, maybe down to, you know, the amount of abuse and stuff they have to take on social media. You know, he's super young, super talented guy. Obviously, his brother's super talented. Hopefully he goes away, you know, sorts kind of like whatever demons he has. And, you know, he's young enough that he can come back and you know, really make another run at the title. He's only 27. Even if he goes away for 3 years, he comes back at 30. Look at people like Chocolatito and Estrada. They're still doing it now in the late 30s. So, you know, like, fingers crossed that he manages to go away and, you know, find whatever he needs to find.
Yeah, yeah. I think he comes back, man. You know, sometimes you just need a break. And like you said, he's only 27. So, I don't know, maybe it was just a time difference going across the world, and he's from Texas, but he also trains in Riverside, California, and Southern California over here. You know, maybe it was the time difference, and being over there across the globe affected his weight. You know, that happens. That's real. I don't know. But yeah, if he does stay retired, which, you know, I don't expect it, but, you know, he's been world champion. He had a good career. He did his thing. But I think, you know, after he kind of focuses on himself for a little bit and, you know, kind of does his thing, I think he gets that itch again and he comes back. He's only 27, man.
And he's going to be surrounded by it, right? You know, Abadi's younger brother been an absolute phenom. You know, he's going to be surrounded by it. So it's kind of, you know, are you going to be able to get rid of that itch to come back when you're probably in the gym, you're helping him, you're working his corner, you're going to his fights? But, you know, above everything else, it's, you know, you want to make sure you're healthy first, right?
Right, right. But yeah, but Iocca becomes, as I mentioned, the WBA super flyweight champion of the world. So, you know, yeah, he's that definitely elevated his profile over there. So we'll see how it goes over there for him. Hopefully eventually he comes to the United States to defend it. That'd be great.
Another super flyweight fight.
Yeah. Hey, these flyweights and super flyweights, they're nuts. They're definitely nuts. Moving on to fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 1st of July, from the Huntington Center in Toledo, Ohio, on ESPN+. A heavyweight matchup. Jared Anderson, 14-0, goes up against Prince Charles Martin, 29-3-1. What do you think about this fight?
Good fight. It is that actually Charles Martin was a kind of last minute opponent, week or so, and a better standing opponent, in my opinion. You know, Charles Martin was briefly the you know, IBF world title holder until he was, you know, pretty much Eddie Hearn bought it from him for Anthony Joshua, essentially. So this is a good scalp.
That was nuts. I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that. AJ Martin. Yeah, I'll never forget that.
So this is a good scalp, essentially, for Jared Anderson, if, you know, if he goes in there and gets the W, because he can have that on his resume. You know, he was in there with a former world champion and took him out. So it's I saw a weird video today that Top Rank posted, and maybe I just kind of looked at it the wrong way. There was kind of like Roy Jones Jr. was in the ring with Jared Anderson, and he was kind of giving him a pep talk about, like, being famous and being, you know, being someone that people look up to. And Jared Anderson was kind of like nearly in tears, and he was kind of saying stuff like, he's like, well, Roy, you know, I didn't ask for this and stuff like that. And I was like, this is kind of concerning, the way that it went down, in my opinion, that, like, he was kind of like, it's like he didn't like the pressure, like he didn't ask for it and he doesn't really want it. And I'm thinking, well, this is a very good, because if you're going to be a future heavyweight world champion, then you couldn't be any more pressure. The heavyweight world champion probably has the most pressure in boxing out of everybody, because that's the biggest guys, you know, the casual fans tune in to watch the heavyweights, you know, your Joshuas, your Tyson Furies, your Mike Tysons, your Lennox Lewis's. So, you know, maybe I read it the wrong way, and I don't know if you've seen it yet, but just the way that he was talking, the stuff that he was saying, you could see there was a lot of passion, and he was kind of upset by having all this pressure kind of like piled onto him, and he didn't like it. But, you know, he's still young, and maybe he'll just grow, you know, as he grows, you know, with his fights and he gets used to the bigger crowds. Hopefully he grows, because looking at the potential he's had so far, all of the big guys that he's sparred with, like Tyson Fury, for example, have all said how good he is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, definitely. Top Rank definitely has a big investment into him, so they're hoping he pans out. So we will see. Also this weekend, from the Manchester Arena in Manchester, England, on Sky Sports, for the undisputed super middleweight titles of the world, Franchon Cruz de Zern, 8-1, goes up against Savannah Marshall, 12-1. I like this matchup. You know, they're both two of the most elevated fighters, high-profile fighters in that division besides, you know, Shields. Why not put them against each other? Because I'm surprised. Have they ever faced each other before? They haven't, huh?
No, because DAZN kind of like moved up to pick up some world titles. And yeah, they're obviously fighting for her undisputed super middleweight. And this is Savannah Marshall obviously moving up from middleweight to challenge for that. I would be surprised if Savannah Marshall doesn't mop her up, really. 10 or whatever it is, 10 round unanimous decision. I don't think she'll knock her out because Franchose Kuhn DAZN is a pretty big, sturdy
opponent. She can take shots.
Yeah, yeah. She can take shots. I think Savannah Marshall just outboxes her and just beats her over 10 rounds for the titles. Franchose Kuhn DAZN is pretty limited, in my opinion. I've said it before on the show, so I'm not going to hide that. What? It doesn't really. She's pretty much like 1-2 big overhand right. 1-2 big overhand right. Pretty much all she does. Yeah, I don't think she's that great, to be honest with you. And I heard today that there was talking about that she might actually sing the U.S. national anthem and then box.
That's nuts. She's going to go down in the history books. I don't know if that's ever happened.
Because she was a contender on like
American Idol or something.
Yeah, one of like American Idol or whatever.
Britain's Got Talent or something.
Yeah, like the U.S. version, the U.S. Got Talent or whatever it is it's called over here. I don't watch the show. But yeah, they were talking about that she's going to she may sing the national anthem. And then straight after that, she takes a robe off and then she'll box.
If she sings and then wins, can't get even better than that, man.
That's the problem, right? If she sings and then loses, then she blames it all on that. You know, like, oh, it took it out of me, you know, going for the high notes or whatever she says.
You never know. You never know. And also this weekend from the Sheffield Arena in Sheffield on DAZN, Dalton Smith, 14-0, goes up against Sam Maxwell, 17-1. This is for the British and Commonwealth super lightweight titles of the world. What do you think about this matchup between Smith and Maxwell?
Good fight. I do like Dalton Smith. I think everybody who kind of in the UK that watches him sees him so far, so good. He's doing exactly what he should do. And I think maybe after this, go up to make a European level. And then you're looking at some of those amazing WBA intercontinental belts and then up to some world titles, you know, slowly but surely. I mean, he's in a super flipping popular division, right? Super lightweight. You know, you couldn't really look for a division with so many big names to get some big paydays over there. Sam Maxwell, you know, he's kind of, I didn't really used to rate him, but then he kind of had a purple patch in his career and, you know, kind of came back through. But I think Dalton Smith probably makes easy work of him. And I think Dalton Smith comes out with a victory towards back end of the fight, 7 or 8 rounds, I think. He's just that good.
Right. And then news and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Jesse Bam Rodriguez, the brother of Joshua Franco, the younger brother, and Sonny Edwards are scheduled to fight before the end of the year, probably in December. Seems like it's going to be for the flyweight title, unified flyweight championship of the world. Matchroom Boxing have officially announced last week. It's the two top boxers at 112 pounds. Rodriguez holds the WBO title and Edwards holds the IBF title. I think Matchroom and Eddie Hearn said it's going to take place in the United States. They haven't said where. I'm assuming it's either going to be Texas or California, right?
I hope it's California, dude.
Yeah.
That'll be for Ring Magazine, right? Aren't they the top two?
Oh, you know what? Maybe. I think you're right. I think the Ring Magazine might be on the line as well. Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. So that's going to be a great fight. Going to be a great fight. Hopefully it is in California, but it could be in Texas. You know, Bam Rodriguez being from San Antonio. You never know. But, yeah, put it at the War Grounds in Carson or put it where? What do you think?
We haven't had a Matchroom show here since Chocolatito, so
yeah,
I think we're kind of hopefully due on. But
San Diego, maybe San Diego.
Yeah, San Diego, the War Grounds. But like you said, it could be San Antonio just because of.
I think it is going to be Texas.
Yeah,
I don't see it. Yeah, and Texas, no state income tax. You take home a little bit more money in Texas than you do in California.
But that's where they are this weekend, right? Well, next weekend, sorry. San Antonio, AT&T Center.
Yeah, July 8th. Yeah.
I suppose it's 6 months away, isn't it? It's December, so yeah, I could see them putting it there, unfortunately. Yeah.
Either way, just had the fight happening is great, because number one versus number two, it's gonna be a very, very exciting fight. So we'll see how that turns out as we get closer to that. And then also, still no opponent for Anthony Joshua as of the recording of this week's episode. They're saying Dillian White again, Otto Waylon, Terrell Miller. Ironically, there was an August 12th reported date. And I mean, what's going on here?
But I watched the Eddie Hearn interviews today, and they were saying that Dillian White accepted like a verbal contract. When the actual contract turned up, it had a clause in there for a rematch, where Dillian White's now saying, like, I don't want a rematch. If I beat AJ, then I'm going to be campaigning for that big Saudi Arabia fight against Deontay Wilder for myself. But obviously, you know, Eddie Hearn wants to kind of like, you know, just protect himself, I guess, you know, protect him and AJ. And obviously, you know, if he, for some somehow, he loses to, you know, Dillian White, hopefully get a rematch in before December, defeat him. And then obviously he gets the big, you know, Deontay Wilder fight in December in Saudi Arabia. So hopefully they can solve that. If not, it's only, 6 weeks away until August 12th. If not, I think, you know, Dillian White's going to do himself out of a nice payday, and it'll probably be somebody like Caballel, maybe even like Dempsey McKean, since we've heard that name bounced about before, and he's AJ's sparring partner. Kind of like a pretty easy little knockaround for him, isn't it, before he goes in there for a life-changing payday against you know, Deontay Wilder in Saudi Arabia in December. Pretty sure you wouldn't really want to risk too much, right, before getting $50 million or whatever they're going to get each.
That's nuts. Yeah. Yeah, for that money, they're definitely going to do something. And then also, Canelo Alvarez recently announced that he has signed a multi-fight deal with Premier Boxing Champions and Al Haymon. ESPN is reporting that the likely first opponent will be Jermall Charlo in September. And then after that, you know, probably Benavidez might be in there. Andre's also with PBC. You know, David Morrell. I don't think Morrell will be included in that lineup. Unless him and Benavidez fight and he beats Benavidez, then maybe. We're not surprised, right? I mean, like, he literally, his last several fights, over 10 fights, have been with DAZN in combination with Golden Boy and Eddie Hearn. He literally kind of cleaned out their stable, besides Bivol beat him, but he literally fought everybody he could over there. And he went where all the other fighters who are big names were at, which is Showtime and Al Haymon. And I don't even want to say Showtime. I'm just going to say Premier Boxing Champions, because in the announcement that Canelo tweeted, he put Premier Boxing Champions. And obviously we know that Showtime, you know, they obviously have a good lineup going on right now, but there is, you know, with the Paramount restructuring and the new executive like restructuring and positioning over there, they're saying, you know, Showtime, even though people are like, oh, they were saying Showtime is going to go away, there's still a possibility. You never know. It's business. So do you think, let me ask you this. Do you think by Canelo's last fight on his deal with Al Haymon and Premier Boxing Champions, do you think Showtime is still there by the end of next year?
Oof. That's a good question. I think in some shape or form, probably. Because I don't think, like we just touched on, the card that they just did was pretty stacked.
No, right. Yeah. But they're also, Espinoza and Showtime, they're, you know, regardless, they're forced to put on cards now because their backs are against the wall because of the whole Paramount situation. I mean, you have to. That's why they made the Spence Crawford fight. Like, you had to. Like, you can't tell me that if this wasn't happening, that, like, oh, okay, they felt a little bit more comfortable. It's just like any business, you know? And, you know, Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis, they made that, you know, because the backs were against the wall financially. It's just like HBO back 5 years ago or so. But Yeah, I don't know. What do you think? Showtime by the end of Canelo's deal with Al Haymon and Premier Boxing Champions. Will Canelo's fight, let's just say last fight on that deal, will it be on Showtime?
He might bankrupt him with that contract, I guess. I don't know. I think they'll still be around. I think even with all the rumors and stuff like that, I think, like you said, moving to Paramount and stuff, the landscape may change a little, but I think that we'll still have him.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, we'll see. I don't think they're going to survive. I think they're going to end up facing the HBO demise eventually.
They may just cut it just due to the fact of, you know, kind of like Dana White says that, you know, some of the cards are like going out with business, you know?
Right.
You know, the fact that so they do some cards and you don't make a profit, you're like, kind of like, well, what kind of like business model is this?
Right. Yeah. It's tough, man. Yeah. It is a business at the end of the day. I mean, it's insane. And then one last thing on the Jermell Charlo reported fight in September for Canelo Alvarez. Both Charlos have been out of the ring for years. It's been a long time of inactivity. If Charlo loses in September against Canelo, what is the likelihood percentage wise that he blames it on the inactivity?
100%, 1,000%, whatever percent people have as the highest, 100%.
Yeah. So be prepared for that. Be prepared for that. That's because that will happen.
He knows that going in. He just accepted it, right? You know, so it's kind of.
Yeah. I mean, but it's a big payday. You know, how are you going to overlook it? It is what it is. Canelo's a cash cow. He's the guy. Yep, even exactly. Errol, as much as people want to say that Davis is the face of boxing and all that stuff, he's not. Even Errol Spence, who's an Al Haymon guy, said that Canelo is the king still. Canelo is the king. Canelo Alvarez. He is. Canelo Alvarez is the king. So, I mean, we'll see how that goes. But definitely Charlo Benavidez. There's good fights over there. There's going to be some good potential fights coming up for the next year and a half or so. So
who's your third? Spence.
Yeah. Because remember reportedly when a couple of years ago, when before Canelo signed the DAZN deal, there was leaks or reports that Spence was offered by Al Haymon at a catch weight of like 164 pounds or something, 165. If Spence beats Crawford twice, because they have a rematch clause, both of them do, Crawford and Spence, and if Spence beats Crawford, especially if he beats him twice, he's definitely gonna get a Canelo fight at a catchweight.
I think we could see Benavidez twice. I think if a lot of people are saying Benavidez might beat him, or even if it's just super freaking close.
I'm looking forward to the Benavidez fight too, but I'm honestly, even though Spence is a smaller guy, he's been fighting in smaller weight, I still think Spence would be an exciting fight, man. Just because of Spence's skill and talent. I just do.
I think Canelo would batter him. He couldn't take out 147 blown-up fat Mikey Garcia.
Man, maybe. Maybe. But I don't know. I just think that Spence, if he gets past Crawford and all that, Spence is a... He has skill to be competitive, man. I think more than people think. I don't know. That's what I think, but who knows? We don't know. But once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode, episode 237 of the Last Round Podcast. We have a bonus episode that we haven't mentioned that's also uploaded in parallel with this week's episode, with an interview of Floyd Kid Austin Schofield. Who's 14-0 with 11 KOs, who fights under Golden Boy Promotions. He's fighting on July 8th on DAZN on the Virgil Ortiz and Stanionis card for the WBA regular world title at 147 pounds from San Antonio, Texas. So go listen to that. It was a really good interview. His dad, Floyd Sr., was also... He wasn't talking to us directly, but he was on the side, so you could hear him kind of answering questions. It was pretty funny. It was really, really funny. So we also appreciate Golden Boy's staff and their PR director, Jane, for helping us coordinate that interview. We definitely appreciate that. Schofield was a good interview. He gave us a lot of good information and stuff that was very about his background, how he got into fights, favorite fighters, and FaceTiming Floyd Mayweather, getting a DM from Oscar De La Hoya, and he thought it was fake. So go listen to that. We got two episodes this week. But as we round the corner towards the finish line, Mike, go ahead and let them know once again where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to join us next week, where we'll be previewing the card that Danny just mentioned from San Antonio, Virgil Ortiz, Stanionis.
So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.